Running a business means checking a lot of boxes.
Let's see. Payroll? Check. Inventory? Check. Insurance? Ugh.
Good thing Simply Business makes getting small business insurance fast and easy. Check insurance off your list at simplybusiness.com.
Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, the show where you get the inside access to the best minds in the game. Each week, Chris has the privilege of chatting with top instructors, legendary players, course architects, and industry insiders. If you're looking to improve your game, gain a new perspective, or just hear some incredible golf stories, you are indeed in the right place.
You see, Chris, I haven't spoken to a press man in my life that is knowledgeable, seriously, as you are. Never.
You do such a great job. It kind of makes me feel good all of a sudden.
You do so much for the game. You're so kind to all of us that are out there in the game. You know, we need more people like you in the game of golf.
Thank you for pressing play. Now, grab your clubs, step up to the tee, and let's get started. This is Next on the Tee.
Hey, Next on the Tee Nation. Thanks for coming back and joining me this week on a very special segment of the show, because I get to spend some time with the guy who won the very first Arnold Palmer Invitational held at Bay Hill back in 1979. We are on the heels of another wonderful API, and I really wanted to kind of go back and have a guy back on the show who was really at the beginning of all of this. Actually, back then it was called the Bay Hill Searchers Classic. And then he also has a very distinguished college career. He won two national championships back-to-back in 1974 and 75 as part of the Demon Deacons. Those Wake Forest teams were absolutely stacked. And this guy was at the heart of it. And who is it? Well, it's Bob Byman. I had the privilege of spending some time with Bob a few years back, and really honored to get to spend a little more time with him here this week. And we're going to go back and talk about his memories and the great play that he had 46 years ago, almost to the day from when he won that Arnold Palmer Invitational. We'll also go back to his time in college. We'll talk about how that win at the API got him into the 1979 Masters, finished tied for 34. So you'll get to hear that story as well. And then as he's grown his career, he has now become one of the top instructors in our game out in Las Vegas. You can go check him out there or online at bobbymangolf.com. So, folks, sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour or so. But before we get started, I want to remind you about our good friends over at On Point Golf and their fantastic On Point ball marker. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with On Point, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023 and they were using an On Point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use On Point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. All right, now back in Next on the Tee with me is Bob Byman. Let me remind you about Bob's background. He's from Poughkeepsie, New York. Played his college golf at Wake Forest, where he lettered all 4 years from 1973 to 1976. He was named All-American three times and All-ACC twice. He helped the Demon Deacons to back-to-back national championships in 1974 and 75. His 73.25 stroke average is still one of the tops in school history. He tied for first at the 1974 ACC championship and finished second the following year behind teammate Curtis Strange. He also took medalist honors at the 1974 Furman Intercollegiate Tournament, the 1975 Iron Duke Intercollegiate Tournament, and the 1976 Duke Spring Invitational. He turned pro later on in 76. Bob played a lot out on the European Tour and had a great deal of success over there. In 1977, he won three national opens in Sweden, Holland, and New Zealand, and finished fifth on the European Order of Merit. He would go on to win the Dutch and Scandinavian Opens twice, including in 1978 by one stroke over Nick Price. He earned his PGA Tour card in 1978. He won the very first Arnold Palmer Invitational held at Bay Hill in 1979. It was actually called the Bay Hill Citrus Classic back then. He won it in a playoff over John Schroeder. Later in 79, he finished tied for seventh at the Open Championship at Royal Lytham in St. Anne's. By 1987, he turned his attention to teaching the game and is now, like I say, one of the top instructors out there and has a wonderful golf school out in Las Vegas. And I'm very excited that I get to have him back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Bob, here we are, right? We're ready for another Arnold Palmer Invitational. You won it 46 years ago, almost to the day back in 1979. Take us back to that week. What do you remember?
Well, that week, I had not had a very good West Coast run. It was my first West Coast that I played there. And so I went back home and took some video and saw one thing that I was doing and worked on that a little bit. And had some Monday qualifier and hit the ball pretty well. Best I'd hit it all year. I don't know what I shot, 70 or 71, got into the qualifier easily. And then after that, I was going to go hit some balls. And, you know, you remember Mo Norman.
For sure.
He was always around Orlando tournaments, it seemed. And so he was out there hitting some balls. So I had known, I'd met Mo a few years before, probably 5 years before, and he knew me, and I'd watched him hit a lot of balls, and I said, Mo, can I watch you hit a few? And I, you know, he was just ripping them the way he usually does, and I just picked up on his rhythm, not on his technique, but just the rhythm and the repetitiveness of the rhythm. So then I added that into what I was doing, and I carried that forward throughout the entire week. Now, I played with my brother, Ed, and Curtis Strange and Jay Haas in a practice round on Tuesday. And that was, you know, one of the best ball striking rounds I had, you know, to date. I mean, I've ever had. It was a tough wind. It was into the wind on 17 and 18. And never missed a fairway, never missed a green. You know, I don't know what I said, 500 or 600. I just drilled those guys that particular day. And I never played that well during the entire tournament, but I had flashes of it and was fortunate enough to, I had a playoff with John Schroeder, and he had trouble on the second hole, and I two putted from about 45 feet, and he couldn't get it up and down on that particular hole, and he won the event. So, you know, that was absolutely fantastic. It was probably overall the best I played. I didn't recognize that at the time, but you know, you go through your entire career and you look back and you go, well, you know, that was probably the best overall. And as you mentioned, I had won a number of events before that around the world. So I was a seasoned professional at that point. So winning was, you know, in one way was a natural extension of what else I had been doing around the world. But it was different winning on the PGA Tour. I mean, everybody was there, and it was quite a thrill. I was very excited about that. Yeah, it's great.
And Bob, you attended Wake Forest on an Arnold Palmer scholarship. That had to make winning his tournament that much sweeter.
Well, it's pretty interesting. You know, I had a relationship with Arnold back starting in 1972. I qualified for the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. I was 17 and was, you know, there's a Tuesday. I was waiting around to play a practice round and, you know, went to the starter and there was like nobody around the first, you know, you remember the first tee there at the Pebble, it's a little elevated and, you know, there's for like three or four groups, I'm just waiting to go out, you know, to get into a group. And then all of a sudden there are hundreds of people around the tee and they call me in and I walked through there. I didn't know what I was going to see. And Arnold was playing, Julius Boros and another gentleman that was a friend of Arnold. And, you know, Arnold kind of said, well, go ahead, kid, you know, go ahead, hit it. And, you know, I hit the shot out to the right, you know, that's probably the most nervous I've ever been in my life on a golf course. And then Arnold threw another ball down and I'm going like, oh my God, don't make me hit another one. And I hit it about 2 feet from there and made double on that hole and then never missed a fairway and never missed a green the rest of the day. Made three birdies. It was about 55 degrees. Wind was blowing 15 to 18, maybe 20 miles an hour. Very tough. And that ended up being probably the best ball striking round I ever had on a U.S. Open golf course. I think I played in, I don't know, five or six of them. And I made like a 20 footer on 18 for birdie and Arnold shook my hand and we got off. And he said, you know, Bob, I don't know what you're thinking about for college, but you should think about Wake Forest. And that was it, right? And then I later on that summer, I'd won the U.S. Junior and a bunch of other junior events. And, you know, I was recruited as the number one junior in the world going in. Curtis Strange was number two. So that was quite a coup for Jesse Haddock to bring both of us into a pretty good team with Jay Haas and David Thor. And a couple other players that, you know, people probably wouldn't recognize, but were darn good golfers, you know, darn good players. And then all of a sudden we all, you know, the top four guys who ended up being on the tour, you know, I was International Rookie of the Year. Jay was just a terrific player. I don't know, he's played in like 800 events, won a major on the senior tour. Of course, Curtis won two U.S. Opens back to back, was the number one player in the world. David Thor got out on the tour. So we were, you know, prodigious winners, unafraid to win. And we just, you know, won the first year, was pretty cool. But the second year we just absolutely dominated. We won by 33 shots. I just went back, what was that, in November, I think. There was a 50-year anniversary.
Is that right?
Of the best recognized as the best golf team ever, you know? And so we were recognized at the halftime of the football game at Wake and everybody was there. I hadn't seen a lot of these guys in my God, 50 years, you know? So it was fantastic. I loved it. It was a lot more emotional than I had anticipated. And yeah, it was just great to see Curtis and David and Jay and the other guys. It was just a fantastic experience. I was very surprised about that. Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Bob, the year prior in 78, you qualified for the Open Championship thanks to your great performances on the European Tour and winning all those national opens. And the Open that year was played at St. Andrews. You ended up tied for 17th alongside of guys like Seve, Tom Weisskopf, Tommy Nakajima, just seven back at Jack, who would win it that year. But talk about getting to play in an Open Championship at the home of golf.
Well, you know, that ends up being, St. Andrews ends up being my second favorite course ever. You know, I'd been winning over there, so I was pretty confident and, you know, winning around the world. I was a good player and, you know, played pretty well the first, let's say the first three rounds and then was paired with Seve the last day. We were, I think, at even par, something like that. And I think Jack and I think it was Simon Owen I think they were tied at 5 or 6 under something. You know, so there was, if you played a really good last round, there was a chance to win. And, you know, I was playing nicely, I would say, not great. I was very anxious, very nervous that round. I think I was 2 under on the front 9, maybe through 11, something like that. And was only, I think 6 under was leading at that point. I said, man, if you could just make a few birdies coming down the stretch. And, you know, I'll tell you, my nervous system really could not handle the situation at that point in my career. And I ended up shooting even par for the tournament, tied Seve, and as you said, tied for 17th. Now, that experience helped me to play at Royal Lithuania the next year, and it actually helped me to win at Bay Hill, because I had been through my nervous system had been through the rigors of that event, and so I was more just tougher. You know, I was just tougher mentally for Bay Hill and then for the next Open. You know, in 79, when I played at Royal Lithuania on the 13th hole, I made about a 20-25 footer for birdie. And I think that brought me back to like 1 over for the tournament. I think Seve was no more than 2 under. He might have been 1 under at that point. So it was like Seve, Jack, and then I was 3rd. And I was really striking my driver really good, really driving it well. And I don't know if you remember those last 5 holes, but there and the wind was blowing. I mean, 25-30. Those are some of the 5 toughest holes, finishing holes I think I've ever played. And, you know, I think I was 4 over the last 5 holes. And I mean, I was playing well. I was tough mentally and still couldn't finish. And that's why I finished 7th. I was like limping in and finished 7th. So I was, that might have been the most angry I've ever been coming off a golf course, because had an outside chance to win, a legitimate chance to make a couple more birdies. And of course, Seve did that. He made the couple more birdies and just ran away from everyone. So, but anyway, 7th, you look back and you go, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it is. That win at Bay Hill gets you into the 79 Masters. You finished tied for 34th there. But yep. What was it like for you to be a part of the Masters?
Well, it was really good. Really enjoyed myself there. Condition of the course was fabulous. That was another situation earlier in the year. I had played with Jack in a practice round. I think this was at Palm Springs. I think I played 9 holes with him there, and I'm going off the first hole. I think it was on Tuesday. It wasn't like it is now where you had to make tee times and all that stuff. I mean, there was like nobody around the first tee. I was probably at 8:30 or something in the morning, and I was just going to go play by myself. And I hit my drive down the fairway, and I'm walking like 20, 30 feet down there. And I hear, you know, Jack's voice. Hey, Bob, mind if I play with you? And I'm going, yeah, come on, Jack, let's go. So I have a tremendous picture that someone took of Jack and me on the first green. And he's pointing down to the 12th green. And he says, you know, he's telling me, look, whether it looks that way or not, everything breaks down towards that way. So, you know, here, that's just another example of Jack, you know, being, you know, taking, you know, good young players under his wing and, you know, give him a little bit of information. And, you know, as you look back at that, you know, 79 was one of my best, if not my best overall playing year. And Jack, if you look back, that was one of his worst years of playing golf. And I'm watching this guy and I'm going, oh my God, this guy sets up like a dream. I mean, I don't know how he ever hits a bad shot. And, you know, he probably hit it a little bit better than I did that day, you know, when we played together. And I'm thinking back and I'm going, wait a minute, hold on now. This is my best. This is his worst. And I'm going, we're about even now. Something is wrong here. This guy is like unfriggin' believable. And then, of course, he made an adjustment with his swing. He was swinging way too upright during that year, and he couldn't hit the ball. I mean, he just couldn't hit it solidly. And then he went back to Jack Rout. They got him back in playing. And then, of course, he won the PGA and the U.S. Open in 1980. One of his best years, really, really swinging good. Like, he hadn't swung that well probably since maybe 1967, really, when he had a great year. And just a tremendous talent. You know, I've seen a few of these guys. I've been able to see, there aren't many teachers out there that have played to the level that I played, taught as much as I've taught, but have actually seen in person Hogan and Snead hit balls. Now, they were older, but it's like I saw Hogan hit balls at the 1970 PGA at Southern Hills, and we had just driven in from Colorado. I was living in Colorado with my brother and I drove in all night, and I went to the practice tee. It's probably 8:30 in the morning, and I just sat down. It's a little bit elevated there, right? So it's kind of like a stadium a look to it. And I'm just kind of resting because I've been in the frigging car for 15 hours. And this guy comes up, has a little hat on, and he drops the balls right in front of me. He's not more than 45 feet away from me. And he hit 50 balls. And I go, oh my God, this is Ben Hogan. And I'm going, you know, I'm 15 years old. I'm all puffy about myself. I'm probably a zero handicap. By then, I'm winning all these junior events. And I said, well, he's supposed to be the best ball striker ever. Let's see what this guy does. And he hit a wedge, 7-iron, 4-iron, 3-wood driver. Okay. 5 clubs, 10 balls with each club. I could hit it pretty well at that point. I discerned literally no difference with each individual club. Now, the wind was blowing 12 to 15 miles an hour left to right on that tee that day. And you remember the balls back then, right? You had to really hit it, you know, fairly forward or with a small curve. And every ball with every club had the exact same, each individual club, not every club had the same trajectory.
Right.
Every wedge, every 7, every 4, every 3, every driver, the same shape with each club. Balls drawing a little bit. Now, everybody's, oh, he's a fade. No, he drew the ball into that wind, and then the wind killed it, and it moved to the right. Each individual, I said, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. I said to myself, well, that's what a human being can do. And that helped me to, okay, I'm gonna try to figure that out for myself. I didn't say, oh my God, how could anybody do that? That literally, a 15-year-old saying that to themselves was pretty amazing. Now, the aftermath of that, he walks off and he's gonna go play. And Jack walks up. and there's the best player in the world. And he took the spot just to the right of Ben. I moved over about 6 feet. And now I said, okay, well, here's the best player in the world. Let's see how he hits. And of course, you know, fantastic. It was really, really good, but not even close to what Ben had just done. And I said, wow, that's just another indication. I mean, this guy is just, he was 58 years old. I went out and watched him play a couple holes. He hit a couple drives in the rough. And I saw him hit an iron out of the rough. It was like the best iron shot I've ever seen out of the rough. And then he walked in and he couldn't play. And he withdrew. So I was
really
lucky. Yeah, he did not play that week. And I guess that was the last time he came out. I don't know that he played again. So it was kind of interesting that moment in time for me to be able to see that. And then just fantastic. You know, we're on this little vein of thought here, Chris. 13 years later, I'm on the tour. 1983 was like the worst year ever for me playing golf, but I'm playing at Disney trying to figure it out. And I'm on the tee at the, I think it was at the Magnolia, and I'm hitting balls on the right side. And there's these two guys way over on the left side of the range. Okay. I'm hitting balls. I look back over there and it's JC Snead. I know JC, right? You know, I wave over there. Hey, JC, how you doing? He says, Bob, come on over here. So I want you to see this. And I wasn't even sure what I was going to go with. It was Sam. Sam was hitting some balls for JC.
Wow.
I walked over there and I'm standing, you know, how far do you stand away? 8-10 feet away from somebody hitting balls or something. And he hits, the setup was the third best setup I've ever seen. Hogan's was the best I've ever seen. Jack's was the second. Sam's was the third. And this guy never missed a shot. He's 70. Well, they're born in 1912, right?
So yep.
He 71 and never missed hit a shot. And he's hitting these five irons out there, whatever, 150, 155. He says, now watch this, Bob. Watch this. All you got to do, if you want to hit it a little bit farther, you just got to get that right leg to go in there. Right. You know, because how he used to have such a spread in the legs coming into the ball. Right. So he said, man, if you just get that right leg in there, you really transfer that weight. And then he hit it 15 yards farther. He just looked over at me and smiled. you are freaking beautiful, Sam. No wonder you won, whatever, 82, whatever right. Out of tournaments you won on the PGA Tour. It's like, wow, this guy could do it on. He's 71 years old. Jesus Christ, he's hitting it better than I am.
Well, except, I mean, one of the great things that I loved about Sam, and I don't know that enough people give him enough credit for how great he was, for how long he was great. But remember, I mean, he was in his 60s,
still finishing in the top five in majors. I mean, he was 62 years old, 1974, shoot 68 in the final round to finish tied for third behind Lee Trevino.
That's right. What a talent. What a talent and great fundamentals. He actually swung better as he got older. And you keep learning, you keep learning and watching, but he could really, really do it. So I feel so fortunate to have seen those two guys. And I'll add one more story for you, Chris, if you don't mind here. This is in 1979, this was on the West Coast. I was not playing that good. This is at the Phoenix Open. I'm playing with Scott Simpson on the back nine of a Phoenix Country Club, right? And we're out there early in the morning. I was 7:30 in the morning or something like that. And we're playing around. And I can't remember the holes exactly, but there's a par three, maybe 13 or 14 or something. And it was maybe 210 over water. The pin was up front, front right. It wasn't more than 7 yards on the green, let's say. And I hit 3 iron in there and, hit it probably 30, 35 feet past. And then we Scott, we're hit where we did. I can't even remember. But then we finished putting around and we walked off to the back of the green, turned around because there was this guy back there. And I know basically everybody swings. And I didn't recognize this guy's swings. And the ball lands 6 feet short of the hole. And it rolls about 9 feet past. The greens were hard. And I go, what? Who did that? Oh, my goodness. So it ends up being we did not ask the guy to come up and play with us. And who was it? Was George Knutson.
Really?
Now, George Knutson ended up being probably the most influential guy for my bringing everything that I know about the golf swing together. Knew a lot, but there were always black holes in there. I couldn't, how do you get from there to there and there? And how, so he simplified that thing with his book and his video. And he had just started teaching in 1979. In fact, he got off the tour in 1979 and you read his book and you understand that, but he tells that story. But I'm looking for somebody. Right. He's starting to teach and I don't ask him to come up. And I'd never met the guy. I never met him. And I said, you knucklehead. There was my chance to be who I wanted to be in the game. And it was just like, just like a puff of wind going past you. And you you don't act on it. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, it's like 6, 7 years, 8 years later, this, you know, I'm reading his book and looking at his video and all that stuff. I go, this guy is just fantastic. So one of probably the top, you know, probably the fifth best ball striker of all time, you know?
Yeah.
And you come to know, you know, George was a very good athlete, but he wasn't a great athlete. The guys that were better than him, ball strikers, they were special. They were great athletes. So George was the best ball striker ever with the degree of talent that he had. So I wanted to know what that guy was thinking about. I said, man, what was he doing? Okay, then you read his book and you go there. Okay, and then you start. So that really influenced for myself and for my students. And it's just been fabulous, really fabulous.
So Bob, for our listeners now that say, I need to get lessons from that guy, how can our folks get in touch with you, follow you, and maybe get a lesson from you?
Well, we have a couple, Bob Byman Golf out there, BobbyManGolf.com, and then GoToGolfSchool.com. You go to that one, it's Las Vegas Golf Schools. And I'm at the Revere Golf Club in Las Vegas. If all else fails, you can always call them and they'll get you to the right place. But those two websites, you can always get me. Yeah.
Well, Bob, I can't thank you enough for being generous with your time and coming back and being part of the show. There's a lot more I'd love to get in with you. I hope we get this privilege with you again very soon.
Well, thank you for having me again. It was fun reminiscing and talking a little bit about golf. Yeah, it's fun to you know, think about those important moments, you know, in your golfing career. So
indeed,
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Take care, Bob. All the best to you and your family.
All right. Bye-bye now.
See you, Bob.
Thank you.
That is the great Bob Byman, folks. Again, BobBymanGolf.com is his website. Go to GolfSchool.com and you can find him out at Revere Golf Club out in Las Vegas. Had a tremendous playing career out on the PGA Tour and has transitioned to being one of the very best instructors in our game. A lot to get into with him. So hopefully we get the privilege of having him back on the show again real soon. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this very special segment of Next on the Tee. Again, my sincere thanks to Bob Byman for being here. And folks, we have a very special March still in store for you. Just had Bob Winters Jr., Tom Patry, obviously Bob Byman here, Wes Short Jr., a fantastic story. That podcast is going to drop very soon. Wes Short Jr. is a guy who made his way out onto the tour as a rookie at age 40. He qualified for his first U.S. Open at age 52, won a couple of times out on the PGA Tour, a couple more times out on the Champions Tour. You're really going to want to hear those stories. Still coming up for you in March, Sean McKeel, the 2003 PGA champion, will be back. Top 100 instructor Tom Stickney will be here. Keith Hirschlin, as you guys know, my all-time favorite author and a guy who is probably the best golf TV producer ever. He'll be back. TP will be back a little bit later on in the month. Vincy Glenn, former free safety for the Chargers, the Vikings, and the Giants, but also a huge golf nut. He's going to be here. He always makes every segment that he's a part of so much fun to listen into. Taylor Crosby will be here. Steve Schindeldecker, head men's coach at Robert Morris University. David Graham, two-time major champion, and Tom Pertzer as well. So a great lineup in store for you for the rest of the month. I hope you'll come back and listen to all of those shows with me as well. Folks, I can't thank you enough for continuing to being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next time, hit 'em straight, my friends. Well, I guess you're gone. Bring it down and bring it on. Well, I guess you're gone. Bring it down and bring it on. Well, I guess you're gone.
when you run a business, there are a lot of boxes to check.
Let's see. Payroll? Check. Inventory? Check. Insurance? Ugh.
Well, good thing Simply Business makes getting small business insurance fast and easy. Just answer a few questions, review your quotes, and get covered in under 10 minutes, all online. It's that simple. Check insurance off your list at simplybusiness.com.